Thanks very much. That phrase, due respect, is, sorry, where are we? Thanks very much. Were there? Thanks very much. That phrase, due respect, is one that anybody in my line of work who's ever been on a radio talk show knows exactly what it means. My approach to this question is highly numerical, and I had for you a presentation to illustrate all of it, complete with graphs and charts and equations. No, that's not true. I deleted the equations. But I'm going to ask you now to, I'm going to dispense with that and ask you simply to think like an economist and assume a PowerPoint. There are many stories, let's say, narrative themes driving tales associated with the rise in inequality in our lifetimes. There is one of them, which we will discuss, I'm sure, at length today, is the notion that it was done by technology, or by the imbalance between the progress of technology and the forces of education. I don't happen to think a great deal of that story, but we can discuss it later on. There have been those who've argued that the rise of inequality in the United States is primarily due to trade, to the outsourcing of manufacturing jobs and the competition both from low-wage workers overseas and from immigrants here at home. There are those who argue that it is primarily a political phenomenon, the result of an assault on the power of private trade unions, neglect of the value of the minimum wage, an attack on the public sector, through which we've all been living for 30 years. There's certainly a good deal of truth to that story. But it's also not going to be the central theme of what I want to raise with you today. The work that I have been doing, and it's now gone on for 15 or 16 years and resulted in 3 books, of which this one, Inequality and Instability, is the most recent, takes this approach to the level of the world economy as a whole and asks the question, what has been happening there and how does the picture in the United States fit into that pattern, into that? And that is something to which we've made, I think, a significant contribution. And what we find is that the phenomenon of economic inequality can, in fact, be appreciated at the level of the world economy. It has certain common trends and certain common turning points. And these very basic facts, which emerge from the evidence, emerge from a project which is basically a measurement project, tell you something, I think, that is very straightforward. In the first place, it tells you that rising inequality hasn't been going on forever. In the 1960s and up until 1970, there's no common global pattern. From 1971 to 1980, actually in much of the world, inequality declined. There was a commodities boom, there was a lot of debt finance growth. It all comes to an end crashingly in 1980. And the rise of inequality has an upswing that begins in 1980 and carries on for 2 decades almost precisely. It goes on at different amplitudes in different parts of the world at different moments. In the first part of this period, it's Latin America and the parts of Africa that we can measure, some parts of Asia, which are getting the brunt of it. In the middle part, the late 1980s, it's Central Europe. It's the countries that became, that were part of the Soviet Union. And you can measure that very clearly. The proportional increases there at that time are enormous. And then in the 1990s, it moves on to Asia, including China. Right? China and India were largely exempt from the wave of rising inequality in the early 1980s, but they became part of it later on in the 1990s. There is a peak. The peak is in 2000. And in some parts of the world, there is actually declining inequality after that peak. This is true in Latin America. It's true in the Southern Cone, is Brazil and Argentina, where
In Brazil, for example, poverty has fallen by half in the last dozen years. And inequality measurably has declined, also in Argentina. It's what some of us call the South American summer. Very interesting period in the history of that continent. What do these patterns and turning points tell you? They tell you that inequality is an international phenomenon, and the turning points tell you that the most likely cause is financial. Not technology, not education, not trade, and not the rise or fall of labor unions or particular politics in particular countries. It's the effect of financial forces on the world economy as a whole. 1970s, I've already mentioned, were a time of boom through credit extension. It comes to an end in the 1980s in a massive worldwide debt crisis. That crisis affects the countries that were most exposed to commercial banks first. It then affects, it breaks down the Iron Curtain, in effect. It was a substantial force, actually. Collapse of commodity prices and debt burdens on what happened in Central Europe. Not necessarily a bad thing, by the way. I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying what's happening in the data. And then it comes to China and to Asia in the 1990s. These financial turning points, as I say, are global, but they have an origin in the richest countries and specifically in the United States. They have everything to do with the way policy was conducted here because we set the terms of finance for the rest of the world. When you look at the US case, and if you focus your attention on income inequality, I'll make just a few very brief points. First, I think everybody who looks at this carefully, and there are people who specialize on the incomes of the top 1%, 1/10 of 1%, 1/100 of 1% as measured from the tax data, and they agree with this, that the major movement of income inequality in the United States is what has happened to those topmost incomes. For the rest of us, the movements are not as strong, and in some cases, in periods like the late 1990s, they actually move in the opposite direction because with unemployment falling in that period, people at the bottom, working people, did pretty well. Poverty rates fell. They fell very substantially for minority groups in that period up until the peak in 2000. But at the top of the income scale, you have this pulling away of a very small spectrum of the society. Who are they? They are people whose incomes take the form of capital gains, stock options realizations, and the incomes from IPOs and venture capital, things of that nature. A very small number of people at the very top, and you can be more specific about who they are. They're the financial sector, Wall Street, the banks, and the people the banks finance, which in the late 1990s was, Silicon Valley was the information technology sector. And in the late 1990s, that was Silicon Valley and the information technology sector. And if you remove just a handful of places from the data, we can do this by county. Take out Manhattan, take out San Francisco and Santa Clara and San Mateo in California, take out Seattle and Bill Gates, and about half of the rise of inequality that we measure in income tax data between counties goes away. Gives you a sense of just how dramatically concentrated this phenomenon actually was. In the 2000s, the picture changes a little bit. In the early 2003, 2004, the places that are gaining the most are actually the belt of counties around Washington, D.C. What's going on there? We were spending heavily in the run-up and start of the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan. And that shows up in the Capitol Beltway area in defense contracts and so forth. And what happens when you move to 2007? Well, once again, you've got Wall Street, but now you've got bubbles of income showing up in places like Florida, South and North, Southern California, and little places like, yeah, places like Las Vegas. What's going on there? Obviously, the housing bubble, the real estate, the buildup to the real estate debacle. And what that tells me is that the study of inequality is a study primarily of instability in our economy, of the non-sustainability of economic phenomena, of the way, of the growth model, if you like. And I'll just close. I know we were asked to keep this introductory remarks very brief. I'll just close with an analogy That's not actually in my book. I wish it were, but it's kind of like one of these dinner party conversations where you think about what you would have said after already walking out the door. It seems to me that when we measure income inequality in a society, we're doing something quite comparable to measuring the blood pressure of a living person. That is to say, there's a healthy range. Right? And within that range, lower is generally healthier. Right? But of course, it's possible for it to be too low. And that's associated with certain problems. You get sluggish. Zero is a value you observe in the cemetery, no place else. But the crucial point is that when you observe economic inequality rising, it is like observing your blood pressure rising. It's a sign that you're heading for trouble, that you're heading for crisis. And it seems to me that's the most, in some sense, the most basic lesson that I can offer from the work that I and my students have been doing for the last 15 years. Thanks very much.